everybody. My name is Shauna, and this is the American English Podcast. My goal here is to teach you the English spoken in the United States through common expressions, pronunciation tips, and interesting cultural snippets or stories. I hope to keep this fun, useful, and interesting. Let's do it. All right. Hi, everyone. Hope you're having a nice day. Today, I'm here again with my good friend Charlie from the British English Podcast, and we have a very fun topic. I told him right before we got on this recording that I'm a little bit nervous to talk about the topics that we have today because it's embarrassing. The topic is embarrassment. So, Charlie, welcome to the show. Are you embarrassed to be here?
I'm not embarrassed. I'm excited. I do still feel a little bit nervous coming onto a podcast, but I'm trying to learn to take that into excitement rather than nervousness. But no, I'm not embarrassed yet. I'm not embarrassed yet, but maybe we will be.
I like that. Do you tell that to your students by chance, just trying to think about nervousness as excitement? Because I think that's a really good tip for language learners.
Yeah. For the exam prep students, I do. I don't know how well it goes in, but yeah, I do try to tell them that. Yeah.
Well, I always try and think if you're not nervous, then you're not doing something right. You're not risking enough and you're not taking chances. So
absolutely.
We're all in the same boat. So how are you doing today? How is everything in your life in Australia?
Well, I had a bit of a weird week this week because I decided for some reason after 10 years of kind of not having great eyesight, getting an eye test, and they told me that I'm very, very blind. So I've ordered glasses and I put them on and I literally was floored. I could not believe how good eyes can be because I've just gradually got worse and worse and worse. And then I put them on in front of my girlfriend, Stacey, and it was like seeing her in HD suddenly. It was very strange. So she was a bit embarrassed.
Your girlfriend's very pretty, so you're lucky there.
But she was embarrassed. She's like, don't look, I've got pimples at the moment.
That's really funny. It's kind of like, I remember seeing a movie called Clueless a long time ago, and they said, you know, oh, she's a Monet, like a girl that looks good from far away. But when you get up really close, it's a big mess.
Very nice.
Yeah. Obviously not talking about your girlfriend there, but, you know, funny term. Anyway. Yeah. So let's jump right into this. Are you able to see your screen?
Yes. I can see the lovely document that you've got presented for
us. Lovely. Yeah, so I just have a few bullet points on here about some of the things I think about when talking about embarrassing situations. And for me, when I think of things that make me embarrassed, they're usually things that either are socially unacceptable. Like, for example, if I were to be picking my nose in public and someone saw me, I would be pretty embarrassed. Maybe if I was picking a wedgie in public. A wedgie for anyone who's listening is when you have your underwear or your pants inside of your crack and need to remove it. Good description there. Or when you're talking to yourself, which I'm not sure about you, Charlie, but for me, in practicing languages, sometimes it's necessary to talk to yourself to hear what you sound like out loud. And I do it regularly. Yeah. So I'm sure at times people see me talking to myself in the car.
Yeah, they say that that's the first sign of madness, don't they? But they haven't really thought about language learners when they thought about that phrase. That's the first sign of being a good language learner, really.
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, you can be talking to yourself, but they say also if you're answering yourself, if you're talking to yourself and answering yourself, then you're really crazy. But but I guess that's also sort of necessary. Yeah, but I'm just curious, what sort of things do you think about when you think about the topic of embarrassment?
Making a scene. I guess this is because my partner and I differ greatly in terms of confrontation. So I actually don't mind a bit of confrontation, and I'll stand up for myself in a situation like if I'm the client in a shop or something and they've done us a disservice or something. I will say, no, come on, like, you should be doing better, or you owe us some money or something like that. But my girlfriend will always, always be like, no, it's okay. And she'll let them walk all over her. So she gets very embarrassed if I do anything that's slightly like, you know, even asking a question about a product, she'll get shy about that. And she'll be like, no, you're embarrassing me. You're making a scene. What are you doing?
And what exactly about that makes it embarrassing for her, do you think?
Oh, might need to get the Freudian. is it chaise longue? Chaise longue? The long sofa one side.
yeah,
the Freudian sofa out. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's because her mother's quite willing to confront. And so maybe she found it embarrassing as a child.
Mm-hmm. How interesting.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes back to that, like, what is socially acceptable and unacceptable. And I think there's just a level of discomfort some people can withstand and, you know, others can't. I actually will always comment. And for example, if I'm in a restaurant and food is sent to me that I didn't order, or if something is not the way I ordered it, I will always comment as well. So I'm there with you on that. I don't find it very embarrassing at all. But I definitely think other things are quite embarrassing. Let's go through my list that I have here. And we can maybe pull from our life experiences and maybe stories we've heard of other people.
Well, one that I've just, sorry to interrupt, one that I've just realized that I find embarrassing is, or I used to find it really embarrassing, mm-hmm. is when I say a joke and nobody laughs. If I'm at a table or something, I developed this like cramping situation where I tense my legs and I'm like, oh God, this is so awkward. No one's laughing. And it would develop into a genuine cramp. So then I would have to like stretch my calves out and be like in pain because of that. Now I'm getting a bit better and I don't develop a cramp if nobody laughs.
Are you one to normally tell jokes at family parties and gatherings?
Not family gatherings. I feel a bit nervous in the like extended family. Uh-huh. They're all quite well to do and it's all a little bit formal.
Okay.
With a group of friends, like four or five friends, and I say a joke and it doesn't land. Oh, that used to kill me. I feel a bit better now, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious about this. This might be a little bit of a tangent, but I've noticed that a lot of British people, when telling jokes, a lot of times they don't end with a little smile or a laugh. They'll just say it sort of straight faced, like a very dry humor, sort of. And I feel like if you were talking to an American, that might actually not come across as a joke sometimes. Whereas like it takes a minute to catch on that it's a joke, because Americans normally start laughing at the end. So they go, oh, yeah, it's a joke. You know, I don't know if that you've noticed that.
Yeah, I totally see that. I lived in America for a little bit. And yeah, I do like the dry humor. I like to not really give away that I'm being sarcastic or something. Mm-hmm. And it did get me in trouble. I can't quite remember any examples. But I definitely noticed that the British girls were better at understanding or reading my dry, sarcastic face than American.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So back when I was in high school, I was going through a phase where I thought I was like the shit. not to swear on this podcast episode, and I was dressed very well. Like I felt like one day when I was, we were visiting my brother in San Diego, I got really dressed up and ready to go to the beach and walked outside and I saw a group of very attractive college guys sitting along a ledge. And I thought to myself, like, ooh, okay, like I have to be cool, you know. And I had my book in my arm thinking, okay, I'm going to just walk by them and, you know, walk to the beach with my book, like, you know, whatever. And I tripped and I fell hard on my face.
Oh.
And they all were looking at me, like, to begin with, not because they probably thought I was cute, but because they probably thought, oh, this girl's gonna fall. I was walking along a ledge too.
Oh, this is worse. You were risking it. You were walking on a ledge.
Yes, with platform flip-flops, which I thought were really cool, which is horrible now that I think back.
Platform flip-flops. I've never heard of a thing.
Yes,
so they've got like a wedge to them.
Yeah, a wedge on the bottom. So I remember falling and it hurt really bad. My knees were bleeding and they were looking at me like, oh my gosh, what do we do? This poor girl, like, should we go help her? And so they came over and helped me. And then I almost wanted to cry because it was embarrassing, first off. And secondly, it was really painful having my knees all scraped up and everything. Tripping in front of people, like, you know, falling over your own feet is one of those things that I go, ah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice phrase. Yeah. Tripping over your own feet. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. good. You literally did do that. Mm-hmm. That's funny that you risked it on a ledge with some wedge shoes. How old were you and how old were they? Because you said college.
They were probably 19, 20, maybe. Okay. I don't know. And I was 16, possibly.
Right. And can we go back to you feeling like you look like the shit?
Like a million bucks.
Yeah. 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 Why? Was this your peak in your teenage years? You felt like this was your best?
I think it was the peak in my lifetime. No. I cared so much about my appearance in high school to an unhealthy level, I think. I had... Right. Like, I always wanted to have my hair perfect, my makeup perfect. I always was buying new clothes. And it's sort of sick thinking back about how much I cared because it's so superficial. But, you know, when you're a teenager and you're all about yourself and what's happening in your own world, I mean, nothing. Yeah, there is no other way for me. So
absolutely. Yeah, it's an important time to feel confident. I was with a friend yesterday and we were doing a bit of a photo shoot, actually, because he wanted to test some of his lenses out. And he told me of this time when he was like 14, 15 years old. He was constantly catching himself in the reflection of a shop window or something, trying to check out his reflection and what he looks like. And his father at some point caught him doing that and he said, oh yeah, like what you see, do you? And he felt so embarrassed and so cringy from his dad thinking that he thought that he looked really good that he kind of stopped doing it from then on. Which is quite a good lesson to have.
Yeah. What does cringe mean?
Socially uncomfortable, mm-hmm. awkward feeling. Awkward, mm-hmm. I know, is probably another one that we need to explain, but yeah, I would say socially uncomfortable is mm-hmm. the best way to describe that.
Yeah. And do you have that too when you say cringe, like when you scrunch your face up in discomfort?
Yes. Yes. That's what I was talking about with a bad joke not landing. I mm-hmm. feel cringe. Oh, mm-hmm. oh, horrible feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. But I did think of mm-hmm. another story, actually, when you were talking about falling on your face. And did you hit your nose or anything? Like, did you scar yourself?
Just my kneecaps. I have the boniest knees, I think, on the face of this planet. And yeah, so blood was immediate.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. When they actually came over to you, they should have, to make you feel better, they should have given you their number. That would have been a nice solution.
That would have been a nice gesture. Yeah. No, I think they were just concerned. Like, God, this poor girl, this pitiful child on the floor. With her book.
Yeah, you were a bit younger. Yeah, it's a bit weird. But yeah, so you reminded me of a story. So I was traveling to, of all places, Uganda to do like 4 weeks of exploring and a little bit of volunteering. I said to everyone I was going on a volunteering trip, but eventually it turned out to be a bit of an adventure for myself. But I did do a couple of weeks of English teaching, actually. Anyway, so I was on the plane and I had met up with a mutual friend that also wanted to do this in the middle of our summer between our second and third year. And our friend said, oh, this person would like to do it, so you should go with her. Mm-hmm. And I met her at the airport and she was relatively attractive. I was like, oh, okay, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, nice to meet you. And then we got on the plane. We sat next to each other. I was on the aisle seat. and I had a glass of red wine with her, and then she started to get sleepy, and I started to get really dizzy, and my eyes were starting to see like speckles,
stars
almost, seeing stars, yeah. And I was starting to slap my face a little bit to try and come to, but nothing was kind of working. So I stood up to go to the toilet to splash some water in my face.
Yeah.
And as I got to the toilet, I just remember this kind of weird memory, the last memory I had of just going like flat from standing to seeing the floor instantly. And I woke up with a bloody nose and I had literally fallen like a plank of wood. And fainted on the plane.
Oh my gosh. Oh no.
And I woke up with four stewards who had pulled me round the back of the kitchen. One of them had my legs raised up and the other one was like wafting air in my face with a fan or something.
Oh my gosh. And is that the first time that happened? Or was that
first time. Yeah, very, very weird. And
that's really bizarre. I wonder if that's the cabin. It had something to do with the cabin pressure plus the wine mixture. Maybe.
I did then come to conclude that it was maybe something to do with the malaria medication that I just started taking, because they did say a side effect was dizziness. So I'm going to try to put it on that or pin it on that as my excuse, not the red wine. But I was very embarrassed because they then said, is he traveling with anybody? We should probably warn the person that he's with. And I was like, no. And then they think, oh yes, he's with the blonde girl in that aisle. I'll go get her. And then I just see her head pop round the kitchen. She's like, Charlie, what are you doing on the floor? Are you all right?
No, I was like, bloody nose.
I know.
That's hilarious.
And then from then on, I had a cut on my nose for the whole 4 weeks of the trip. And she loved telling anybody that said, what happened to your nose? So she'd be like, he fainted on the plane from a red wine.
That's really good. That's a good story, though. This is one of the things that I feel with these stories are they're embarrassing when they're happening. But afterwards, they become so good at any sort of social gathering you're at when you're like, oh, remember that time, you know, when I just made a complete fool of myself? We also have an expression in American English to eat shit. And I'm sorry to keep saying the S word here, but I'm wondering, do you have that in England as well? To eat shit, to mean to fall straight on your face?
It's becoming accepted as a phrase that we understand, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we use it as much. Maybe comedians use it, meaning that they're like bombing on stage, like they're doing badly.
Yes, interesting.
But I think it is more American, definitely. Yeah. So can you define it again?
Yeah, it just means to fall very hard on one's face.
Okay, so comedians might be using it in a metaphorical way. I could be wrong with them using it anyway. But yeah, to fall very hard in your face. I'll try and think of a British version of that. I'll come back to you.
Okay. Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about it is like a skateboarder going off a ramp and just eating shit. Like, sounds really disgusting, I'm sure, for someone that's a non-native English speaker going, ugh, yeah, what's that about? Public speaking is obviously a very embarrassing thing to do for some people that do not feel comfortable speaking on stage. I don't really have a story with that one, although I know quite a few people that have had issues in public speaking. A lot to do with the stuttering, a lot to do with the forgetting, you know, losing one's train of thought, or a word being on the tip of one's tongue and then not being able to say it, not being able to express oneself correctly or in an eloquent way because they can't grasp exactly what they want to say. But yeah, I'm curious, do you have a fear of public speaking or do you find it embarrassing in any way? Or
I think I do find it stressful. I like it and I'd love to get really comfortable with it. But yeah, I when I talked at my sister's wedding, I was the MC, which is the master of ceremonies. Meaning like you introduce people to do the speech. So you're kind of not center stage. You're not in the limelight, but you are on the mic quite a lot. So I had a little bit to say and I had these notes, but they weren't uploading. For some reason, my phone wasn't working and it was on the cloud. The notes were saved on the cloud. So I was like, oh, God, I can't get them. And then last minute, I decided to just bring my laptop and actually hold my laptop while standing, because I was that nervous about forgetting it. And it looked ridiculous. Like, everyone was commenting, like, why has he got a laptop? Why is he standing up with a laptop in front of him? Very strange.
Now, looking back on that, do you feel like it would have gone better if you had just spoken off the cuff?
Nice, nice phrase. Yeah. Spoken off the cuff, done it without planning or like spontaneously.
Yeah.
I had a few lines that I wanted to get perfect. And I knew that if I don't have this like smooth segue onto that line, it won't work. So that's why I wanted to keep it. But yeah, you're probably right. Although I did once try to do off the cuff and nothing happened. Nothing came to me. It was just very awkward. So, yeah, I got a bit nervous about the idea of that being repeated. But yeah, public speaking, it's a hard one. My friend, actually, he does this thing called Toastmasters.
Have you heard of it? I've done it a few. Yeah. But yeah, explain it, because I think definitely listeners should know that this exists, because it does exist outside of the United States, probably outside of, you know, in pretty much countries around the world, this program exists. And so I think, tell us about it.
No, you tell me. I haven't done it.
Okay. So basically, there are groups that get together. They're within this Toastmasters community. And a lot of them actually during COVID happened online. So you can even join a Toastmasters group, which is essentially a public speaking practice group. You can join them online. Even on Clubhouse, the app, that it's for free. You can join it and practice public speaking. So you might have a 2 to 3 minutes to speak about a specific topic, or, you know, they'll ask a question that's, you know, what do you think about this quote? And you have to speak about it. There's a very strict organization to how the meetings are run, with minutes taken and everything. And then you speak. And so it basically trains you to get better speaking spontaneously off the cuff. You know, it's
that's really good.
It's very cool. It's something I didn't do very much of, so I can't remember the specifics of how the meetings are run, what the times are or anything. But the people that are in it are very inspiring. And not only that, they're so supportive for people that are nervous or non-native speakers as well, because there are a lot of non-native speakers in the Clubhouse group that I joined.
That's so cool. Good. It's such a good tip for language learners, for English learners as well, because it's in English mainly. I wonder though, but no, it's probably in multiple languages all over the world, right?
So when I was in Brazil, because I think it was started in an English speaking country, I can't remember which one, but the community in Sao Paulo in Brazil that I went to, they were speaking in English. And so a lot of them were non-native English speakers. And that was really cool too, because a lot of them got to practice English as well as public speaking at the same time. So it was very,
so good.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say about Toastmasters?
Just that one of my friends has done it for the last 2 years every Tuesday. And he obviously must feel so much more comfortable with it. But he went to a wedding, his best friend's wedding, and he was the best man, and he was still bricking it. He was still very nervous. So he was like, even though you can practice it, it depends on the audience. Like, his audience were all of his really close friends, and it was his best friend. So it was like a really important one. And the pressure is on, because your best man is typically got to, you know, make everybody laugh.
Yeah.
So I reckon it depends on the situation, but nice to see that there are these options to practice it, because it really is something that we don't practice much.
Exactly.
Most of us.
Yeah. Bricking. Did you say bricking?
Bricking it. Yeah. Then maybe
what
this
is
a British one. To be bricking it is to be very nervous, like kind of like shitting it. Sorry for the S word again.
That's funny. Bricking it. I wonder where you guys came up with that. That's interesting. So you're kind of, you have ants in your pants.
Yeah, that's quite a childish one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That you use with your daughters?
I don't say I have ants in my pants. Only if they're in the room. Yeah.
No, but if they're nervous, maybe
yes.
you would say that.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. You wouldn't really say, "Oh, are you shitting it, darling?
Are you breaking it?" Would you say that to it? Would you say that to a kid? Or is that only
no.
exclusively for adults?
It's probably just for adults, but well, teenagers and onwards. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. A few other things that I think are kind of embarrassing: spitting while you're talking. I don't know if you have been at a meal and you kind of see a little, like a little droplet of spit fly from your mouth onto someone else's food or like in the direction of their face. And I find that pretty horrifying.
Yeah, there's no smooth way of getting around that one.
Because you both see it.
I actually did it. Sorry, I actually did it last weekend, and a guy just very smoothly like wiped his forearm, and then I was like, oh, I just spat on his forearm, and he felt it, and he didn't say anything to me. Oh, that's terrible.
And the moment just went on. That's funny. Another one: getting something stuck in your teeth and then someone not mentioning it. Would you mention if somebody had like a piece of spinach between their teeth? Would you say something?
I think it's the person that can see its obligation. I think it's our obligation to say. Yeah, I think it's rude. I actually get a bit offended because I'm comfortable with them saying, "You've got something in your teeth."
Yeah.
But I feel a bit mocked if I've gone a whole couple of hours and then I see it in the mirror.
Exactly. Yes.
But it depends on like what kind of substance it is. If it's like a bit of spinach, like really clear, something food-wise, then, but, you know, if it's something a bit less obvious, it might mm-hmm. be awkward. Like, oh, no, that's just me.
That's just plaque.
Yeah. I haven't seen the dentist in 10 years.
He hasn't flossed for a while.
Oh, then the embarrassment would be back on you, wouldn't it?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's really funny. doing something like, you know, saying something at a dinner table where you can't really like escape the environment, but it was inappropriate for you to say. I feel like that's something that happens quite a bit, at least.
Yeah, you just made me think of, mm-hmm. So interestingly, the word pardon, it has, instead of saying excuse me for like when you've burped or maybe passed wind, farted, most people would say, excuse me, or sorry about that, or pardon. But I've learned, and maybe you've learned if you've watched The Crown, that it's actually what they do in the upper class, they just ignore it. Like they literally don't acknowledge it at all. If like the great auntie or whatever has just broken wind, made a big fart, no one can flinch. No one makes any kind of suggestion of something happening and they just carry on. And that's how the upper class deal with it.
So, like, the queen's at a banquet table and she lets one slide.
Lets
and
one
then,
rip, yes.
And then suddenly, like, you know, everyone kind of just, you know, flinches a little bit. And then because they know what happens. No, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, if you flinch, you've got, your head's going to roll. Yeah.
That's hilarious. No. Yeah. Yeah. When was the last time they decapitated people?
Well, I'm thinking of Henry VIII now. So that was in the Tudor period, I think the 1400s.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know when the last time. I don't think they've done it for a long time. Maybe Queen Victoria probably had a go at, I don't know. I'm making stuff up now. But yeah. Oh, Queen Lizzie, she's good. She's probably willing to let somebody flinch at her fart and not behead them.
I like that. I think that is almost better, but you always know that people are behind the scenes are gossiping about what you do. So I don't know.
Yeah. But I do quite like that. I like the idea of just not even flinching.
Yeah.
I think that's quite a good solution. But it will never happen because it's quite funny, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I think any body noise, you know, that comes out, it's just somehow like oddly, yeah, something that was inside that came out is automatically gross, unless it's like speech, you know? So I think, yeah, in any sort of social situation, something involving that is going to be, awkward in some way. I have a few stories about that, but I don't know. I think I'm a little bit too nervous to share those.
I won't push you.
All right. We're going to skip those for now. Like, thinking about embarrassing people in my life, like, I absolutely love my parents. So I never had the issue of having them drop me off at school and being horrified to have them be there, because they're just cool, normal people. But when I started traveling to Europe, I felt like there was a stereotype about Americans wearing white tennis shoes with white socks that are high, and also shorts, like shorts with, yes, the big white socks and, yeah, maybe a fanny pack around their waist, like this typical American tourist idea. And my dad is all about the white, big white socks. And so when I started traveling, I was like, I really don't want to call attention to myself. I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb. I want to fit in everywhere I go. And so I'm like, Dad, please don't wear those in Europe. And he's like, why are you telling me what to do? Like, I'm fine. And now, obviously, with age, I totally don't care about that sort of stuff. But it brings me back to the days where I really did care about certain things like that, like appearance or, yeah, just things like that in general. And I'm curious to know, have you ever?
Yeah. My father's very embarrassing when we go on holiday, or when we used to go on family holidays. But actually, thinking about it, your father, if you were to go to Berlin now, he would fit right in. He would fit in with the cool kids. Fanny pack, or we call bum bag, very cool now. High socks, white socks. That's really good. They say he's got good sock game.
Good sock game. I like that. What does that mean? He's jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, he's just he's bold with his socks, and he knows what he's doing, and he's doing what the trendy kids are doing, or
rocking
what is trending. Yeah, rocking the socks. Yeah, maybe not so cool with sandals, but trainers, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Trainers, yeah, sneakers. Yeah. I do remember going to Southern California, and there were a lot of people in Southern California recently doing that. And my dad always has to comment. Now, every time we see someone with white shoes and socks, he's like, look at them. It's in style. Like, he doesn't let one slide.
Yeah. There you go. I've even got a pair of white socks that I love to pull up now. But yeah, my father, going back to that, so we used to go to the Canary Islands or the south of Spain for family holidays. And it was very much a resort holiday. And being a teenager, you'd kind of suss out the people around you that could be potential friends for the next 2 weeks.
Sorry to interrupt you. What does suss out mean? We don't use that in the US.
Suss out? Yeah. Investigate and kind of conclude.
Okay. Like to check out?
To check out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. And I always felt like those people, their fathers were pretty cool. They looked cool. But my father was quite similar to yours, but a British version. So he had sandals and socks. He's a bit of I love him, but he's a bit of a goofy man. And he's the type of person that wears glasses and then sunglasses on top of the glasses.
Oh, nice.
I love that reaction. Oh.
Yeah, I know those people. I don't know them personally, but I've seen them, and I think, wow, you know what? You really don't care. Good for you.
No, he really doesn't care. And he's super confident as well. Like, he'll go on karaoke, even though he's got a terrible voice.
Good for him.
Yeah. But yeah, he embarrassed us a lot. And whenever he would get the microphone to go on karaoke, the whole family, including my mother, we would disappear from the bar, and we would try and hide behind a wall until the song is over. And then we'd kind of scuttle back into the bar.
But there's always got to be that one person at a karaoke bar, doesn't there?
That's true.
The one person that's just horrible, but they're enjoying themselves. And you know what? I feel power to them, you know? They're having a good time. They're enjoying themselves. So what if they don't have a good voice? It's actually really problematic because Lucas, you know, he's a musician. And when we were in Brazil, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to go do karaoke. And I'm like, wait a second. Every single one of you plays the guitar, sings, like, you guys are super talented, and there's me, you know, and it's like, this is not going to work. I'm just going to be, you know, out in the crowd enjoying.
Do they mind you being in the crowd?
No. I'm sure they would. Yeah.
I like going to karaoke if the pressure's not on to sing. I've got a terrible voice, but I love watching. I like that. But they always try to drag you up. Do they try to drag you up onto
the mic? No, because they know I suck. It's like, I think if you're really good, you don't pull the person that's like really bad up. You know?
That's true.
Kind of. Yeah. Kind of the other way around, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I agree.
But I don't think there's actually too many other things on my list that I wanted to talk about, like walking around with your fly open. That could be embarrassing.
Ah. Oh, we use the plural there. Flies. Interesting.
Really?
Small.
Yeah.
Small,
okay, and the fly would be just the zipper on your pants, on the front of your pants. We say, I see London, I see France, I see, you know, Charlie's underpants, or like whoever it is that has their fly open. And I'm curious, do you guys sing that song too? If they have someone has their fly open?
Because trousers, that wouldn't work. The rhyme wouldn't work.
Oh, right. Yeah. How funny.
Yeah. We say you're flying low. You're flying low, mate.
That's cool. Yeah. All right. Also waving hi to someone you don't know, or calling someone by the wrong name.
That's good. Oh, I really enjoyed once I was cycling through a park and this girl was trying to get rid of a fly, like very clearly, like it was bothering her, but it looked like she was waving. So I made a joke about like waving at her. And then she was like, it looks like I'm waving. And she was like, oh.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that's cute.
Yay.
But, that's cute. But I think if anyone waves to me in the park, actually, it would make my day better. So even if it's awkward, you know, like even if it's someone I don't know comes and waves at me, I'm like, yeah, all right. Nice people out today. So you brighten someone's day, I'm sure.
That's very sweet.
Thinking someone is waving or talking to you when, they're not. So on the opposite side of that, like when you're like waving.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I'll tell you what I feel very uncomfortable with that happens a lot is when you're saying goodbye to somebody or like a group of people and you've got to say goodbye. British people, I think Americans might be a bit more comfortable with a handshake. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But British people are halfway between a kiss, a hug and a handshake. Ooh. We don't know what's going on. So, yeah, it's always, always awkward.
It hasn't been established yet?
No.
Okay.
What about if you were in a group of, like, a mixture of family and friends of family?
We would probably just go in for the hug. I think COVID made everything a little bit more awkward. Like, we do a lot of knuckles now. But, I think we would do a sort of, like, half hug, just not really facing them.
Yes.
My aunt was saying the other day, like, when I was talking to her, she was commenting on how weird it is for women to hug, because a lot of times your boobs touch. There's like an embracing of breasts. And she's like, have you ever thought about that? Like every time you hug a woman, you're like pressing your breasts together. And I was like, that's a very odd thing to think about, but it's sort of true. And like now every time I hug someone straight on, I'm like, oh yeah, there's your...
that's brilliant. That is so funny. Yeah, should we just touch our breasts together? Yeah, lovely. Okay, see you later.
Yeah. No, but I know what you mean with the awkwardness of it, because, I mean, even being in Europe and you go, okay, I go from one country to the next. I can't remember, it's Switzerland and France where it's like two and then it goes to three all of a sudden, three kisses. And then I'm like, God, you guys, the kiss thing is really awkward for someone that has no idea what they're doing because they almost hit you in the middle. You know, I'm about to like accidentally lay one like flat on someone's lips. So, yeah, I get you. I would be a real mess in Britain then.
Yeah. So the result is just actually awkwardly standing next to the person that's the most comfortable in this kind of situation. And then they like
initiate.
Dictate what's going to happen. Yeah, initiate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so if they just wave goodbye to the group, then you're like, bye.
Yeah.
And then if they start kissing, then you start following suit and you kind of make a line of like, going
that's a good tip. Good tip there. Yeah. I will definitely take that one. Yeah. Good. All right. Well, I think that's it for today. It was so nice having you on this podcast episode. Do you have anything else you would like to share?
No, other than we're going to be doing a conversation all about British stereotypes that Americans think are true that might not be so true on my show, the British English Podcast. So if you wanted to check out Shana on that, then go ahead. But it was really fun. I loved that episode. Embarrassing stories. It's a great idea. Well done. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks. All right. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to this episode of the American English Podcast. Remember, it's my goal here to not only help you improve your listening comprehension, but to show you how to speak like someone from the States. If you want to receive the full transcript for this episode, or you just want to support this podcast, make sure to sign up to premium content on AmericanEnglishPodcast.com. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.